side up. Keep it up, either side that gets blue. If you have nine sons in a row, start a baseball team.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Peter Bogdanovich's 1973 film, Paper Moon. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Oh, Ben, I would kill a man for a knee-high right now.
Man, I was kind of excited when I saw that because I don't know if, I guess, maybe worldwide listeners or even listeners who are not from the South will know about this, but there's this restaurant, this amazing Southern restaurant called Cracker Barrel. And they have all kinds of weird...
Those are everywhere, Ben.
Okay, I don't know. I haven't seen one out here in California, but...
If you're near a highway, there's a Cracker Barrel.
Okay. The point is, they adorn their walls with all sorts of, like, old-school advertisements for products that, like, barely exist or sometimes no longer exist. And when I was a kid, I always used to go there and see these advertisements for Knee High, which is the soda that they drink in Paper Moon. So, yeah, I had a hankering for some myself when I saw that.
Although you have never tried it, right?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe when I was really young, if we happened to, like, stop.
Back in the 1930s?
Yeah, exactly. But
Ben's,
yeah, no,
87 years old, folks.
Are you, have you ever had Knee High?
No, I don't think it exists anymore. Okay. I don't think it's existed since, like, the 40s.
Okay.
When Pepsi was invented.
Okay, all right.
Like, wait, we don't have to drink the swill water anymore? We can drink Coke? Awesome. See you later, knee-high.
All right. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So,
Ben,
Tyler, oh, go ahead.
I just got word. I want to take back my previous comments. Knee High is actually one of our sponsors. So, Knee High, the best damn thing you'll taste this side of the Mississippi. So... apologies all around.
If only we actually had sponsors.
Oh, that's a good one.
All right. Well, I've got the character name game for you this week. Awesome. And as longtime listeners know, I'm going to give you a character's name. You have to guess at the end of the episode what movie that character is from. Hey, man, I'm just doing this for potential first-time listeners.
I think we have a few new listeners, and we want to welcome you.
Yeah.
And yes, I definitely think you should explain the name of this game.
Okay, yeah, character name game. You have to guess the movie this character's from. Anyway, here's the character name. Pretty Boy Floyd. Pretty Boy Floyd. So think about that, and keep in mind, of course, as always, there has to be some sort of connection to a movie that came out this past weekend. So
I feel like I should know this one.
You should. You should. We'll see. Let's move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, which I actually have one that I want to mention, and, you know, kind of concerts or any sort of special pop culture type stuff that we've been consuming. So, Tyler, what have you been checking out this past week?
Oh, couple of things. I actually have a music album in my media consume this week, but I'll get to that in a second. Checked out this week Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Ben, have you seen this? Have you heard of this?
I have, yeah, and I know you're a big Kat Dennings fan, so that
featuring, well, maybe not so much anymore. featuring the character, or featuring the talents, I guess, if you want to call it that, of Michael Cera, Kat Dennings, some other girl, and a bunch of other guys.
Nice.
This movie blew ass. I don't know if you gave this a positive review at all. I think you might have mentioned it on the podcast. I don't think there's an actual review at notjustnewmovies.com.
I have not written an actual review. That's correct.
But you mentioned it on the podcast?
I might have, like, a long time ago. I actually didn't mind the movie. Why didn't you like it?
Well, I was hoping for maybe some comedy, maybe some interesting stories. Maybe some, you know, more Kat Dennings.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get any of that. I mean, it was the only thing I really enjoyed about it was this idea of a band who just shows up wherever and people have to figure out where they're going to be.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing that kind of had some type of creativity behind it. You know, it's just like two people who go to high school, I guess. Michael Cera's, you know, whatever, Michael Cera, take that where you will. And they don't really have any problems. They don't really have any struggles or anything like that. Michael Cera drives like an outrageously, unnecessarily crappy car. I mean, clearly, he lives in this huge house. He can't afford, you know, a used car from a lot that runs. You know, it doesn't connect with me at all, I don't think. I mean, I like music, but this movie was not about music. It was about shitty cover songs of other songs. Very similar to a Rock of Ages or a Glee movie, I'd say.
Wow, I think you're selling it a little short, I've got to say. I think it is about music. I think it's about, you know, it's a romantic comedy, so...
Not much comedy, but right. Not much romance either, especially between the movie's writers and the audience. Not much of a romance.
Romance, okay. I mean, I thought Kat Dennings was charming in it. It's been a little while since I've seen it. I also thought Michael Cera was fine. Like, you know, you either like his kind of shtick or you don't, and I happen to be a fan of it sometimes. When if I don't have to watch it, like, all the time, then I'm good with, like, small doses of Michael Cera here and there. I don't know. I thought the music was interesting, if I remember correctly. And, you know, there's some funny stuff in here. There's, like, the cool kind of, this may be a spoiler for the movie, so I apologize if it is, but there's some sort of connection to, like, a studio where Jimi Hendrix played, right? Like, Nora's dad owns a record studio or something, right? That's like a reveal at the end, am I right?
I think that's one of the plot points, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and
I just watched it yesterday. I've tried to forget about it.
Okay, and it's an early role for Ari Grainer, who is, like, a slowly kind of... I guess she's an up-and-comer in the kind of indie film scene. She was in a couple movies that I saw at Sundance this year, one called For a Good Time Call, which is about her and another girl who create a phone sex line to make money in New York. And then
Does it have any relation to Tommy Two-Tone's hit Jenny?
No, I don't believe
75309.
I don't think so. For a good time call.
Good time call.
No, and then she was also in this movie called Celeste and Jesse Forever, which is actually a really good. I don't know. I guess you could call it a romantic comedy. It's more of a drama, really. But that is going to be coming out later on this summer, and it's got Rashida Jones in a lead role and Andy Samberg as well. So, anyway. You know, Nick and Nora, not terrible. I'll give you that it's, like, not one of the best independent films, or even in this, you know, like, whatever, musical subgenre. But I think I liked it a little bit more than you. But anyway,
Pretty crappy. Don't check it out.
Right.
A movie that you should definitely check out, and one of my favorites, Masters of the Universe, starring Dolph Lundgren and Courtney Cox, if anyone's ever seen it. A young Courtney Cox from 1987. Check this out this week. Rewatched it for the upteenth time. Ben, I hear you're a huge fan of this film. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That is not entirely true.
Okay, go ahead and explain.
You and I watched this for the first time like a few years ago.
Yeah, this was like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had seen it like maybe... Did you see it as a kid?
Yes.
Okay, and I had never seen it. So the first time I watched it, I was, whatever, mid-teens or something. And I was like, this movie is like... so cheesy that there's not really, I don't know. I've never been a huge He-Man fan. So this weird Masters of the Universe movie isn't even necessarily like a full-on He-Man movie, in that most of the movie actually takes place, what, on Earth in like a normal city, whatever, New York or something like that.
Yeah, because they dimensionally travel from Eternia to planet Earth.
Right, and
because of the cosmic key, Ben. Come on, keep up.
Of course. Well, it makes sense for them to do that on like a studio level, but that's what that whole movie feels like to me, is like a studio mandated thing where they're like, okay, let's make a He-Man movie, but instead of setting it in Eternia, you know, the land of He-Man, and like making it like, you know, all out, like one of those Conan the Barbarian movies that you like, you know, instead of like really creating a world, let's just have it set on Earth so we don't have to spend the money on set design and production and all that kind of stuff. Plus, a lot more people will come to it because they'll relate to it better because, you know, it takes place on Earth, and we'll just have these really ridiculous elements going on in the background and cast Dolph Lundgren
yeah.
in a lead role. I don't know. It just kind of...
If we put me into an executive role, I would approve all of those decisions.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems... The whole thing seems a little cynical to me. Like, if you're going to make a He-Man movie, make a freaking He-Man movie. Like, go all out and have him riding on the back of a tiger or whatever he does.
It was very reminiscent of the Flash Gordon film 7 years prior, 1980.
Really? Okay. The
sets and characters and kind of the storyline, just a little of that like space sci-fi fantasy feel that everyone kind of comes to love. But
Well, we watched Flash Gordon for this podcast and talked about it on one of the episodes, and I remember liking that movie. I have really fond memories of it, even though it is like super cheesy and ridiculous. So maybe, I don't know, maybe if this, as you say, kind of harkens back to the Flash Gordon tone, then maybe I would like it better on a second viewing, because I've only seen it that one time that I watched it with you. So maybe
I think you'd enjoy it. I'd check that out.
Cool. All right.
You're wasting your time with the Nick and Norris of the world. Might as well check out some real movies.
All right, fair.
And finally, I want to bring up Journeys. I found this at Best Buy for like $5. Journey's Raised on Radio studio album from 1986, keeping the same vein of things going on here. Features such hits as Girl Can't Help It, Be Good to Yourself, and of course, I'll Be Alright Without You, featuring two live bonus tracks, which are pretty awesome. If you've ever seen Journey live in Houston or heard Journey live in Houston, you know they give a pretty good show. They're actually coming to Florida with Pat Benatar and Loverboy, but it's not the real Journey because Steve Perry, who does not sing anymore with Journey, is not with the group anymore. So, Raised on Radio, pretty good album. Listened through it like two times this week, keeping it in my car.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple cool songs. One of them feels very much like an 80s cop, like a Magnum PI kind of show opening,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're like rolling the credits of the characters.
Yeah.
Can't remember which one's that, but there are a lot of slow songs on here. They're, the kind of the good ones are like, you know, Be Good to Yourself and stuff like this. But
yeah.
Raised on Radio, the kind of the self-titled song or whatever you call that.
So
pretty good.
Have you seen, this is going to sound like a tangent, but I promise it's related. Have you seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
I believe so.
Okay.
A long time ago.
All right. Well, you're probably not going to remember then if you saw it a long time ago. But there's a scene where, Judge Reinhold is washing his car, and there's a song playing in the background, and I think it's called Raised on Radio. And when before I was a big Journey fan, I saw Fast Times at Ridgemont High and wanted to know what that song was. And then I was like looking through whatever, let's call it Tower Records, even though there wasn't a Tower Records in Florida that I know of. I was looking through some sort of music shop, Sam Goody, what have you. And
Sam Goody.
I don't know.
Maybe FYE, that's the one that we usually have down here.
Sure, yeah. It was pre-FYE, but that's okay. Anyway, okay. Point being, I was flipping through a bunch of these records and saw Raised on Radio by Journey, and I was like, oh man, maybe this is that song that Judge Reinhold's listening to while he washes his car in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I really like that song for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I saw that movie when I was like 13. Long story short, it was not that
What's
song.
Not?
No, nothing, nothing to do with it. So there we go. Great story, Ben.
Sherlock Holmes of the music world right here.
fantastic.
That's a pretty good story, though. I like that.
Okay.
I like that we gave props to these really big CD stores that no longer exist.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, pick that up. Maybe download that legally at your local iTunes. Maybe even stop by Best Buy and go into the $5 bin and find it.
There you go. That's probably CDs, cheaper than buying it on iTunes.
CDs, yeah, seriously. Like $1 a song, you'd be paying $13 as opposed to $5. You get all of them on a CD. It's kind of a lost art form now. CDs, still pretty cool. I have my whole book sitting next to me right now. And from your experience, I've learned that people don't like to steal CDs out of the car. They'll steal everything else but the CDs. So it's a safe bet to put your music on CDs instead of a very valuable iPad, iPhone, iTouch, things like that. That's my advice to you.
Yeah, I can speak from experience there. Yeah, I was robbed a few years ago, and
take the CDs.
Yeah, I had some Oakley sunglasses, like an iPod, a knife for some reason in my car, and like a couple other, like a Bluetooth headset or something, and this person, the thief, stole everything but left like Journey and like a bunch of other CDs that
the most valuable thing in that car.
Yeah, exactly.
The book of CDs that you had just lying on your passenger seat, I believe.
Right. Yeah, and
I avoided it. Fingerprint free.
I might have told you about this, Tyler. When I called the police and tried to have them like come out and take a look, and they're like, yeah, no, we're probably not gonna find anything. Well, I was like, can you just come out and make me feel better? Like, make it seem like you're actually gonna do some work.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, I guess we'll send out a patrol car or something. So somebody comes out, and I was like, look, these CDs are sitting on my passenger seat right now, and they were in the center console. So can you, like, dust them for prints or something? I didn't touch them. The thief was the last person to touch them.
Right.
Just take my fingerprints, and maybe you guys can find this person if they're in the system. And they're like, yeah, we'll dust them. And then they, like, this person, like, half-assed dusted the CDs and just never called me back. And I was like, oh, man. Great job, LAPD. Anyway.
No, don't say that. They listen. They bug those places.
Well, okay.
We stayed over there.
Anyway, okay, so
See, you're not the Sherlock Holmes of the music world. You're the real Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, exactly. Freaking dusty friends.
Yeah, who would have thought? But that's it for me, media consumed.
Okay, well, moving on into what I've been consuming. I actually have a couple events that I wanted to mention. One, my roommate, Pat Miller, former co-host of this podcast, works for a certain company. I don't know if we've said it before, so I'm not going to say it now, but that's the reason that he's no longer the co-host. It was a conflict of interest. He works for one of the studios. In any case,
I know what company he works for.
He ended up getting some passes to the X Games, the Big Air competition, which was pretty awesome. It takes place here in Los Angeles, and we all went out and checked out the X Games. Tyler, I know you and I used to play the Tony Hawk video games back in the day, right?
I think so, yeah.
You're a fan of skateboarding in that
film? I like when I can see them eat dirt. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I guess it's kind of exciting.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'm not like a huge...
I prefer snowboarding and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, well, this is as close to snowboarding as Los Angeles. massive air ramps and stuff, and
right.
Bob Burnquist, who happens to be one of my favorite playable characters in the Tony Hawk video game franchise, was there, and we kind of went to see him, and he ended up winning the gold medal at this Big Air competition, which I think, and hardcore skateboarders who are listening to this, props to you, first of all, for listening to a movie podcast, because it seems like those two interests don't really cross over that much. But hardcore skateboarders might correct me here, but I think that Bob Burnquist actually invented the game, the Big Air competition itself, like created the ramp and everything. There was this kid named Jagger something who's 11 years old competing in the X Games, which I thought was pretty cool. He's like the youngest kid ever. And then the guy who won the silver, I think his name is Mitchie Brusco. He's like 15 or something. So like Burnquist is like whatever, 35 or something, going up against these kids who are like less than half his age. And the old dude still took it down. So I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, he did start the game, so maybe he arranged it to also win the gold.
Yeah, maybe.
That's exactly what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah, he does like an ankle grab at the last second, and he's like, wait, no, you guys didn't know? If you do that, you get 500 points, and you just win. I created this thing, so you didn't...
All right, guys, there's a secret move that'll get you 500 points. I'm not going to tell you which move it is, but there's only one person in the world who knows what that secret move is, and it's me.
Oh, man.
Are you competing? Yes, I am.
I'll tell you when I do the move.
You'll know.
So another event I went to was an art show called Six Seasons in a Movie,
paid... Ooh, that sounds interesting. What's that in reference to, Ben?
It paid tribute to the TV show Community, which I know you despise.
Ah, the old show Community.
Yeah, you hate with an undying passion.
I do not hate that show. I just think Happy Endings is better than Community.
Okay, all right.
That's the only argument I have.
All right. Well, sure. I happen to be a huge fan of Community, and we actually met Danny Pudi there, who plays Abed. He was out to just, like, you know, nobody was paying him. He just wanted to show up and check out all this art. It was like an art show that collected a bunch of art from random people, artists and stuff in the area, and even, like, across the country, I think, who had just painted and drawn and created Community-themed artwork. and
it was really sweet looking.
Yeah, gathered it in one place and had like a bunch of different styles and stuff, and all the stuff was for sale. I ended up buying a print from the Remedial Chaos Theory episode, which is the one, if you guys watch Community, where Jeff rolls the dice and creates a bunch of different timelines, which is one of my favorite Community episodes. So, yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to the people who are running that, and Danny Pudi was really cool. We got to talk to him and get our picture with him and stuff. So,
did you give him a business card?
No, I didn't give him a business card.
Damn it, Ben.
You'll see, Tyler, when you come out here, you'll see how things go down. So, actually, speaking of that,
business card the shit out of that place.
Speaking of you coming out here, I wanted to tell you on the air a development that happened. So, another thing I watched this week was a movie called Jeff Who Lives at Home, which I've actually
Jason Segel, Ed Helms.
Yes, yeah, I reviewed it at notjustmovies.com, so people can go and read my written thoughts there. Just briefly, I really like this movie. It's very like low key, kind of lo-fi. It was written and directed by the Duplass brothers. Mark Duplass plays Kenneth in Safety Not Guaranteed, which is one of my favorite movies of the summer. So he's like a, you know, multi-hyphenate actor, director, writer, producer, that kind of thing. In any case, Jeff Who Lives at Home, totally worth your time, worth a rental, absolutely. It's, like I said, low-key, good drama, good performances from everybody, good script, all that stuff. In any case, I was watching this movie, and it's on my PlayStation, PlayStation 3, and it stopped halfway through, and I got what is known as the yellow light of death, which I was totally not aware existed in the PlayStation, whatever, universe, I guess. I know that Xboxes have the red light of red circle of death or whatever.
Red ring of death.
Yeah, red ring of death, thank you. And, yeah, my PlayStation just completely crapped out right in the middle of the movie, so we'd rented Jeff Who Lives at Home through Redbox, and I had to break this thing open get the disc out so we could return it to Redbox so we didn't have to like keep paying, you know, however much a day to do this thing. So I ended up like cracking open the PlayStation and stuff, and it was just completely destroyed. There was nothing we could do about it. So I went out and bought a new PlayStation 3.
Oh, God.
With Call of Duty Modern Warfare came with the system. And traded in all of my other games and got, so now I have Call of Duty, LA Noir, which I'm really looking forward to playing, and NBA Live 2010 and NCAA Football 2011. So there's some stuff for you to do, Tyler.
So wait. So we no longer have NBA Live 2008?
That is correct.
And the team that we took to the championship?
No longer exists.
No longer exists, Ben.
Nope.
You're killing me.
I know.
How many stats did Tyler have on that game that are now just non-existent?
I know. I was kind of heartbroken.
I mean, it was like 3 out of 576 alley-oop attempts that I love to like brag about.
Right. I do realize that you can create a new team in football and maybe even in basketball as well. So I'm gonna try to have new players and teams and stuff created for you by the time you come out here.
You know, I think there might be, because the data for 2008 will still, because you destroyed the PlayStation.
Yeah, it lives on the hard drive, which is now in a dumpster.
You destroyed all of our memories.
So,
is this supposed to be a good story?
Well, it's a good story because now we have new things to mess with.
All right. So you're such a good friend. I'm gonna let that slide.
I ended up having to delete a lot of stuff on my old PlayStation because the PlayStation itself only had 40 gigabytes of memory. Mm-hmm. And this one that I have now has, I'm looking at right now, 320 gigabytes of memory. So
is that a good increase? Is that a good...
Yeah, I'm never going to have to delete anything again. So
awesome.
So yeah, that's the media that I've been consuming. I think in the ensuing couple weeks, I'll probably be talking a little bit more about those games. LA Noir was like a big deal when it came out, but now like nobody gives a crap because it's been like a year or something since it came out. But I'm still excited about playing.
Hey guys, you want to talk about LA Noir?
No,
I played that like a year ago.
I'm 14 months.
I want to talk about it now.
14 months too late. All right.
I want to be there for that conversation.
All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Paper Moon.
Keep your sunny side up, up, high. Kansas, 1936. Out of the darkest days of the Depression comes the adventures of two unlikely con artists, Mose Prey and his companion, Addie Loggins.
Uh-oh.
I heard you was a bootlegger.
Oh, no, sir. Not me, friend. Must be some mistake.
Ryan O'Neill is Mose Prey. Tatum O'Neill, daughter of Ryan O'Neill, is Addie Loggins, our very first film role. This is the Peter Bogdanovich production, Paper Moon. Or as P.T. Barnum put it, there's a sucker born every minute.
All right, so Paper Moon came out in 1973. It was directed by Peter Bogdanovich and stars Ryan O'Neill and Tatum O'Neill. Tyler, have you ever seen Paper Moon, and what did you think about this movie?
I had not seen Paper Moon before, and I think you might be wrong about the year, Ben. This did not look like a movie from 1973. Is there a meaning behind that?
It says 1973. I don't know what to tell you.
Definitely looked like a movie that was maybe 40 years, made like 40 years before that. So
I think that's just the look. That's what they were kind of trying to.
Okay. I thought maybe they just didn't have enough money for like updated equipment.
No, I think that was a stylistic choice. Pretty sure it was set during the Great Depression.
Well, you know what? I'm completely turning my views around because didn't care for the movie until this point where I realized that it was a stylistic choice.
Are you serious?
I absolutely love it.
I can't tell if you're being.
You can't tell if I'm kidding or not.
No, I really can't.
I'm joking.
Okay.
But I really did like the movie, though.
Okay.
I knew it was a stylistic choice.
Okay.
And you know, I don't think anyone's that dumb. So okay. Thank you for not believing me.
just making sure. You.
Ryan O'Neill was pretty awesome in it, and I guess that was his daughter because they share the same last name.
Correct. Yep.
Father. No, in the movie, you're not really sure whether they're father or daughter or not.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an attitude. The dialogue between them is pretty enjoyable. Yeah, it's a pretty it's not even like heartwarming or gross or corny or anything. It's actually pretty funny because they're, you know, they cuss at each other and stuff, so it's fun.
Yeah, and she seems to have like enough kind of moxie and spunk to
kind
of fire right back at him. You know, she can keep up with his nonsense, and I like this movie a lot too, by the way. I think con man movies and like heist movies and stuff, these are some of my favorite like subgenres, I guess. The Brothers Bloom, which was written and directed by Rian Johnson, took a lot from this movie. I know this was like a big influence on that film. And then watching this movie, it reminded me a lot of Matchstick Men, which was directed by Ridley Scott and I think came out in like early 2000s, 2003 or something.
Nick Cage vehicle, Ben?
Yeah. And Alison Lohman, I think, plays I saw the movie in theaters and haven't seen it since, but I think she plays like his daughter, and there's a question of whether or not they're actually related, that whole thing. That same kind of subplot is going on in Matchstick Men. It's been a long time since I've seen that. But another kind of interesting thing to note here at the top is that this movie was written by Alvin Sargent, who is a screenwriter that wrote Gambit, which is a really great Michael Caine movie. I think I talked about that a few weeks ago in the media consume section. And he's written a bunch of stuff. Ordinary People, which I think won an Oscar. What About Bob, which is a really great Bill Murray movie. And then he actually wrote the original Spider-Man trilogy, the Sam Raimi version, and worked on the new Amazing Spider-Man, which is out in theaters right now. So when I saw the credits for Paper Moon, I was like, Alvin Sargent? This movie came out in the freaking early 70s, and then I just saw the Amazing Spider-Man the other day and recognized his name from that, and I was like, man, this guy is still writing? What's going on? Like, he started in the mid-60s, and he's still writing superhero movies, no less, so that's kind of interesting, I guess.
I liked how you referred to it as the adequate Spider-Man.
I mean, it was. It wasn't.
I want to create a smear campaign that just averages out the films. The adequate Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, it was.
That's a new Sentinel series right there. You just have Spider-Man doing like regular things, like going to the grocery store and stuff, and nobody really cares that he fights crime. They just think he's kind of boring.
Getting money out of the ATM. Maybe he like hands hands somebody their receipt as they walk away that they left in the ATM or something. And they're like, oh, cool, thanks, Spider-Man.
Yeah, he acts like there's really something wrong. He's like, wait, no! And people are like, what is it, Spider-Man? He's like, you forgot your receipt from the ATM. Like, aw, adequate Spider-Man.
I like it. I want to see
so
that.
Many ideas there.
I want to see
that movie, too. I'd rather see that than Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, Peter Bogdanovich directed this movie. This guy, I don't know a ton about him, but Wikipedia says he's a film historian, director, writer, actor, producer, and critic. So, he kind of came up in the wave of New Hollywood, which includes Brian De Palma, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Scorsese, Francis Ford Coppola, these guys who made a lot of these movies in like the early 70s and stuff. They really kind of defined the way that we look at Hollywood movies today. And I mean, Spielberg and Lucas are kind of like, I was going to say single-handedly, but double-handedly responsible for the concept of a blockbuster. So I mean, to say that they redefined movies is not an exaggeration.
Or in George Lucas's case, how we see movies over and over and over again.
Indeed. But a long time ago, I don't remember what episode it was, but on this podcast, I talked about a documentary about John Ford, the Western director,
mm-hmm.
and Peter Bogdanovich, I believe, directed that documentary, and it was just like a huge interview. It was like a long series of interviews that he conducted with Ford himself. And so I guess that's where like the whole filmmaker slash critic slash historian thing comes into play. And that was a really great documentary. I don't remember the name of it. If you search for John Ford and not just newmovies.com, you'll probably find it in the show notes of one of those earlier episodes. But in any case, I just thought it was interesting to point out the, you know, kind of Peter Bogdanovich's status, I guess, and kind of where he was in Hollywood and what he was doing at the time and stuff. Because it seems to his relationship to Ford kind of seemed to influence this movie. Did you notice any of that kind of stuff rubbing off, like the super wide shots? And
I haven't seen Stagecoach, which is Ford's movie from 1939. But I mean, yeah, as far as the wide like landscape shots and things like this, or like where the scene where they roll up to the plant at the very beginning and you see all of the plant and just the little car rolls up.
Yep.
These kinds of shots. Ford, I think it was the same documentary you watched where he talks about Spielberg walked in and he goes, where do you put the camera? And it's like, if the horizon's on the top or the bottom, like that's where you want to put it, not in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm more familiar with Ford's like Calvary trilogy and the Searchers and like 40s and 50s movies, especially with John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, very similar. I like, and speaking of kind of historic films or films that kind of give an homage to things in the past, I really thought this was kind of it said a nostalgic look, which it's not really nostalgic for us because, it's kind of 80 years too late.
Yeah, way before our time.
But, like, he could definitely kind of relate, and people in the 70s could probably definitely relate if you were in, like, your 30s, 40s, 50s, and you were kind of looking back at what life was like in the Depression era and like listening to the radio and like walking everywhere. And if you lived in the Midwest, it was kind of shitty because it's nothing really grows because especially during the summer, corn and stuff grows, I guess. But, like the Dust Bowl of Kansas and Oklahoma and these kinds of states, like there's really not much to look at. You just kind of drive through the states because you have to.
Yeah.
And, so it was kind of interesting just to see kind of, not only was he bringing up the stuff that existed in the 30s, but he was trying to make the movie look like it was from the 30s, which a lot of people may appreciate. Today we look at movies like Super 8, which make us think of movies that we watched as a kid from the 80s, like E.T. and these kinds of films. And so, like, those are always the most popular films today. Well, in the 70s, it was probably a film about, the 30s. And in the 50s, in the 70s, again, it was a movie about the 50s, with Grease and American Graffiti and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think there's always going to be a niche for directors to kind of call back to this kind of nostalgic part of our brains that makes us want to go watch a movie because it reminds us of something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a good movie in that regard too.
Yeah. And that's probably because when those directors were coming up, that those were the years that they were, you know, kids and kind of coming of age and stuff. So they probably have all these romanticized memories of what it was like back then. So yeah, it's only natural for them to kind of be drawn to material that takes place in that time and stuff like that. Nostalgia's never gonna go away.
Right. And having said that, that wasn't even like the best part of the movie. I mean, I like the characters and what was going on and kind of the, like you said, like the con artistry that was happening, like that kind of stuff was more interesting than the fact that it was black and white and it reminded you of the 30s. Like, you know, again, it's nice to kind of see, but it's not really something that carries the film. Like, there were other aspects that carried the film.
Yeah. And the performances, I think, were definitely one of those aspects. I think Ryan O'Neal was awesome. I've never seen him in anything, to my knowledge. I'm not going to look up his filmography to prove myself wrong on that, but I don't think I've ever seen
him. Wow, he was in Jurassic Park.
Played the dinosaur.
He played Dinosaur Number 4.
What do you know? So, yeah, I thought his relationship with his real-life daughter was really great, and yeah, they're just like the way that he was kind of like this slimy con man, you know, who's taking advantage of these old women by selling them Bibles and stuff and like stamping their names in the back just by finding their names in like, you know, classify or obituary sections of newspapers is like pretty skeezy. But he's also like a dude that kind of is relatively harmless, you know, like he's not doing anything too terrible. And, you know, it's got, you're talking about this nostalgia thing. They're talking about, like, it's funny that the younger girl, Addie, is the one who kind of has to remind him, like, hey, man, Frank D. Roosevelt says we got to look out for each other. And, like, we have to, you know, she was, like, the one who was kind of drawing him into this kind of sense of Americana where, like, everybody's supposed to come together and really, like, look out for each other and protect each other and kind of form this American dream society where like anything is possible. And he's like this cynical dude who's kind of been beaten down by the system and having to resort to these cons as like his only way of life. And I mean, you can see in the movie, it's like something like Rounders or any sort of gambling movie, like The Hustler that we talked about with Paul Newman, back, you know, whatever, 12 episodes ago or something. When these guys, they have such like a rocky roller coaster lifestyle because they can be up really high and, you know, they have a whatever, I mean, in this particular movie, I think like $800 or something was the most that they had. And they were like riding high at that point. And then at any given second, because of the nature of what they do, they can be like, get the crap kicked out of them and have all their money taken and just be back to zero again. So
that was one of the funniest parts was when he was right near the bank that they were supposed to meet at.
Mm-hmm.
So from my understanding, like he got his ass whooped by the cops from Kansas or wherever. Mm-hmm. And then they're done with them. And he's like, hey, yeah, guys, can you drop me off by that Missouri Valley Trust Bank? Because I got to meet my daughter there. And they just drop him in like a hallway.
Don't put me too close because I don't want to actually see the guy that I'm supposed to be meeting, but put me close enough.
All right, how about this doorstep right here, this stoop? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's good. And it's like, just tosses him out of the car.
Yeah.
All right, see you later. Thanks.
Yeah, but I liked the scams and stuff, you know, the $20 bill scam where they wrote the note on the back and stuff, and they just kind of crisscrossed through 20s. The country. Just like
I like the one where they do the, here, I'll give you 5 ones if you give me a 5, and then like, here, I'll give you a 5 and just give me a 10,
yeah,
and then they like quadrupled their money.
That one kind of like took me a little while to figure out exactly what's going on. I'm not really good at math for those of you who are listening to this. And,
sure, well, yeah, we know, but,
yeah.
Or I know. I know.
So it took me a couple times to grasp that one fully, but
because they gave them $5, they gave them some ones, and then they handed them the ones. They gave them a 5, then they gave them the 5 back, and gave them 10, so they actually made $5.
All right.
Because I didn't understand the 20 one with the Happy Birthday Addie on it.
Yeah. Because
he came in and bought like I don't know. Some toothpaste, so we got like $19 back.
Yeah,
and then she gave him 5.
Yeah,
or she gave the cash register 5, and then she got the 20 back. So they really got $19.20. So they really made back, I don't know, they made a profit of like $10.
Yeah, something like that. Again, I'm not really good.
I'm not going to dig into it. I'm not really subtracting everything, but adjust for inflation. That's probably like, you know, just using hundreds instead of 20s.
The point being, they're good at conning people. So
if I give you 50 ones, just give me that 50, eh? Oh wait, here, if I give you this 50, you just give me 100, eh? You know,
yeah.
I think people will still fall for it today.
And I like that she is kind of like a, you know, she like. You and I, or you especially know, but listeners probably know at this point too, I really don't like kids in movies.
It's awful. They're terrible.
And this one, you know.
A few exceptions.
I would call Tatum O'Neill, young Addie here, an exception to that rule. She has this kind of, yeah, like spunky attitude, and she's like in the diner scene in the beginning, she's like, I want my money, and like just like pitches a fit and like calls all this attention to themselves when they're drinking the aforementioned knee-high soda.
Knee-high in a Coney Island, eh?
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is a Coney Island? But yeah,
a hot dog, Ben.
Hot dog, yeah. I don't know.
Like, it's like a good friend Coney Island Carl always says, you're nothing if you don't have hot dogs.
Yeah. That is his catchphrase.
I think he only uses hot dogs as currency. If I give you 5 hot dogs, will you give me a bag of buns?
That seems like the guy from Popeye who just...
Yeah, the guy who asks for hamburgers.
Hamburgers, yeah.
I'll pay you back next Tuesday. I don't know how it goes. That's not funny anyway.
So, okay, I've got a question for you. The guy at the hotel, the maitre d' or whatever at the hotel.
That bangs Madeline Kahn.
Yeah, that exactly. That bangs Madeline Kahn. Is that guy the dude from Blazing Saddles? Do you remember who I'm talking about? The guy who was like,
you mean, Slim Pickens?
Varmint, whatever. Like, I don't remember exactly.
Are you talking about Slim Pickens?
Maybe.
That his name?
It might be. I'm not entirely certain if
I don't think Slim Pickens was in the end credits, but he might have been going by his real name before he changed it to Slim Pickens.
Okay. I don't know. It just looked a lot like that guy to me anyway. So like maybe it wasn't him. But
Brooks connections there. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks also tries to do that with didn't he try to do that with Young Frankenstein? He tried to do like a nostalgic look. I think High Anxiety, he tried to do that. There's another movie. Oh, Silent Film or Silent Movie.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah. So maybe he was drawing some ideas from Paper Moon as well.
Yeah, I mean, if that was him, then that would be a little reunion or whatever with Madeline Kahn, who's also in Blazing Saddles, so... Good stuff. What did you think about Madeline Kahn in this movie?
She's in every movie she's in, she plays like Madeline Kahn. So it's not like she had a certain attitude about her and a certain comedy that she had. Regardless of how people feel nowadays, women are funny. Like, I don't know who was that. Someone said that recently.
Adam Carolla, I think.
Yeah, people start talking about it. I was like, fuck that guy. Yeah, she's got a certain humor about her, and she always kind of plays to that same kind of character. Which
she was like the Michael Cera of the 70s.
Oh, don't go that far. Don't insult her. But yeah, I really enjoyed her. She was only in it for a bit of the film, but yeah, she turns out to be kind of a same con artist as they are. So they got a little dose of their own medicine there, and yeah, fairly enjoyable. Pretty hot. I'm not gonna lie. Pretty hot for, you know, someone who's 40 years ago. What am I trying to say here? Older.
Yeah, sure.
Possibly dead? I think she might be dead.
She might be, yeah. R.I.P. Madeline Kahn. You were awesome.
Shouldn't we check that before we say R.I.P. Madeline Kahn?
Sure, yeah, if you want to check it.
I think she might have died in, like, the 80s or the 90s, perhaps.
Wow, okay.
I don't want to be like, you know, Gene Wilder's still alive. It's not like...
Yeah, he is.
One from the 70s is dead or anything.
Right.
On that before we just throw out REPs willy-nilly.
Yeah, I'll check in a minute. But in any case, yeah, I liked the subplot, especially with Addie and Irma Jean, you know, like working up their plan to, you know, set up the desk clerk and all that stuff. And then when they roll out, it seems like the movie has a good pace to it, you know, like he picks up Tatum O'Neill in the beginning, and then you know, they jump, like, the whole movie kind of keeps going at a pretty decent clip. So they jump into that whole Addie and Irma Jean plan after a little while, and then right after they leave, they immediately go into the bootlegging subplot as well, which I liked. And I did like how those guys kept kept coming. It seemed like something out of like the Blues Brothers or something, where like these guys, these like redneck hick guys who have been wronged by these con men, refuse to give up. That's like they just like put all of their responsibilities aside and like just leave and go across the country and just do whatever they can to track down these people who've done them wrong.
I didn't even think that they could come back and just kick his ass. And I was like, hey, wait, you really can't arrest him here. You're in another state. And they're like, yeah, we're not here to arrest you. We're here to beat you down. And I was like, oh, I guess they could do that.
Yeah.
And then they hand him a what for. I was interested to see where Randy Quaid would show up.
Yeah. He
showed up as the wrestling hillbilly towards the end, which isn't really a deviation from most of the characters he plays in most films.
Yeah.
And in real life. So tip of the hat to Randy Quaid.
My girlfriend said that was the worst fight scene ever, the wrestling scene, because they They circle each other for a minute, and they're like, the brothers or whatever, like, get him, Leroy! And then Ryan O'Neill?
Mose.
Yeah, Mose. He's like, look out, look at that thing on the ground, Leroy. And then he just kicks him in the stomach and punches him in the face, and that's it. Like, fight over. Randy Quaid does not swing a single time, so.
They were pretty excited to get that new car, though. It's like, why didn't you just trade cars?
Yeah, I don't know.
We have to do the wrestling, but I guess that was entertaining for them.
I guess Randy Quaid was like the alpha male, and like as soon as he just got his ass handed to him, they were like, all right, sweet, we get what we want now.
A new subplot where Mose is now like the silverback of the Hill Jacks in Kansas. Should have sent them off to kick the policeman's butt.
Spinoff of Paper Moon. Let's do it now, like years
later. Paper Moon 2. Even papier.
Paper mache.
Now the reference to the film, the title, is just her... okay. First of all, the cover, the movie poster is in color. The movie is not.
Yep.
False advertisement. The movie poster also features Ryan O'Neill and Tatum O'Neill on the Paper Moon, but in the movie, it's just Tatum O'Neill on the moon.
Correct.
False advertisement. I don't get it.
I think...
Shouldn't it just be called, Addie, Get Your Gun or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's actually based on a novel called Addie Pray, but... I mean, Paper Moon, you know, it's a symbolic thing, you know, it's got like the... It's a representative of a dream, you know, like this thing that they're chasing, but it's not actually real. It's this kind of,
okay.
You know, it's,
Ben, did you read that somewhere?
No, I didn't. You know, it's this really,
it's on your own because I'm amazed.
It's kind of a heady, you know, like a philosophical thing, you know, it's like,
did you have an extra piece of pie this morning?
I maybe do. Maybe
a cup of coffee.
You know that I eat pie every morning. No, that's not true.
Hi, I'm Ben Pearson, and I like to start my day with an extra piece of pie.
That actually does sound pretty good right now, though.
So come on down to whatever place you're advertising.
To Pearson's Pie Hole.
If you won't take it, we'll shove it down. Enough roofing, Ben.
And, you know, they've got, like, I also liked at the very end of the movie how, you know, this whole thing that they're kind of, maybe even... this might even connect with the concept of the Paper Moon that I was just talking about, where this thing that they're heading to is like this idyllic life for Addie, going to Saint, where are they going? Saint Joseph's
Saint
or something?
Joseph.
Saint Joseph's.
Yeah.
And, you know, dropping her off with her Aunt Billy or Millie or whatever. And of course they kind of take the long way there and develop this really cool relationship along the way, but there's always this thing that they're moving towards, and it's dropping her off and kind of giving her back to her real family, which we may not, like, nobody's really certain if he's actually her father and she's already with her real family, but that's all that aside. I thought it was cool how the end they finally get there. And she's kind of, you know, a little bit more upset about it than he is, but you can tell he's still a little disappointed in having to part ways. And the house that she walks into looks gorgeous. I mean, especially for, like, whatever, the 30s when this movie's supposed to be taking place. It's this two-story, huge place with literally a white picket fence out front. It's like, how much more of the American dream could you be asking for here? And she goes in, and she's got the, you know, there's a piano there, and she mentioned, hey, can we get a house? Can we get a piano with him earlier? So it's like, seemingly all of her dreams have come true at this point. But this, it's like all... paper, man. It just crumbles. It's not what she really wants. So, I don't know. I thought it was cool.
That's deep, dude.
Yeah. Crumbled up, throw in a fire. Light it up.
Have another piece of pie.
Yeah, exactly. Pearson's Pie Hole. $4.99. All right.
Wow, that's pretty pricey for a piece of pie.
It's good.
It must be really good.
It is good pie. You're going to trust me. You want it.
Okay, all right.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much covers a lot of the stuff that I had written down here. Do you have anything else you wanted to bring up before we wrap this episode up?
Yeah, it's a simple movie. It's simple characters, simple storyline, nothing too deep, nothing too complicated, nothing too confusing or heartbreaking, just a good adventure with a couple of people who yell at each other. It's fun to watch, and seriously, check this out.
What an Aykroyd impression that was. Yeah, I liked the film a lot. I think it's definitely a great con man movie. And it's only an hour and 42 minutes, so it's not really that much of your time if you're looking for something relatively quick to check out. And it's probably, I mean, I don't know if it's considered a classic, but it seems like it should be, with as well as it kind of handles the relationships and the genre pieces or the genre elements of this movie too. So definitely if you're into these kinds of films like Matchstick Men and Brothers Bloom and stuff, give this one a shot because it's worth your time. So, Tyler, you want to rev up the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
I sure do, Ben. Let's bring her out, the old Apple II. Every time I see her, I just think, you know, there's another great movie just like Paper Moon coming out of her for next week, and let's pull that lever and see what's coming up. All right, so for next week, we are watching Point Blank from the year 2010. Don't confuse it with Point Blank from another year. Point Blank 2010. It's a French film. I think it features some things. Some other things will happen, and then one character will say something, and another character will have something else to say to that.
Great.
And some dialogue will be created.
Great.
And we'll talk about it here on next week's episode.
Brilliant, brilliant stuff. Yeah. No, I've heard this is actually a really quick kind of, fast-moving action movie. There's a big chase sequence that sounds really excellent, and the phrase, the body count rises, is in the description. So, yeah, look forward to that. I'm going to be talking about that next week. If you guys want to shoot us an email, you can do this at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail as well, anytime. Day or night, midnight, whatever time you want. Doesn't matter. Go straight to voicemail all the time. Nobody's ever going to actually pick up the phone. It's 904-469-6566. That would be pretty awesome, though, if we hired some sort of secretary or something who just, like, took messages for people.
And just be like, Pearson's Pie Hole. How can we help you? I'd like to redirect to the Not Just the Movies podcast voicemail.
Voicemail, yeah.
Like, okay, no problem.
You guys can subscribe to this show for free in iTunes. Please do. Leave us a review. That would be great. It's GeekTyrant-NJNM. That's where you'll find it in the iTunes store. Take a second and leave us a review if you can. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/NotJustNewMovies.
And hey, Ben.
Twitter, twitter.com/ NJNM podcast. Yes, Tyler.
I was waiting for you to say the Facebook thing because right now, let me tell you a little something that's going on right now at our Facebook page.
Do it.
Facebook.com/NotJustNewMovies. We have an event going on, and the event is just to kind of get people to talk and say, hey, look, buddies of mine on Facebook, look at this cool page we have here, the Not Just New Movies podcast page. And our goal is 600 friends, because there's a possibility of getting 30,000 people to friend us. So we're starting small with 600 people. Panther Joe thinks we should start a little smaller with like 100. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I have greater things in mind. We get 600 Facebook friends for our podcast page, and we'll review a little film, Ben, I think is right up your alley. Can you tell the folks what movie that is?
I believe it is called Ginger Dead Man 3 Saturday Night Cleaver. I have seen the first Ginger Dead Man movie, in which Gary Busey turns into a maniacal killing Gingerbread Man.
Yes.
And I've not seen the second one, so I'm not going to. But if we do reach 600 fans on, or likes or friends or whatnot on Facebook, then yeah, we will be reviewing Gingerbread Man 3 Saturday Night Cleaver. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. I know a lot of people have actually joined the event to attend the Get Us to 30,000 Facebook Fans event, but they have not actually liked the page. So that's what we're
Let us remind them that this is not an actual event. Nothing is going down.
Right. It's just we're on the certain day and time when the event is supposed to take place. Everybody is just supposed to invite all of their friends to like the Not Just New Movies Facebook page. That's all we're trying to do. Just drum up a little publicity here. Spread the word for show. We think it's good, obviously. It's why we're doing it. And I know
we show up every week.
You guys think it's good because you're listening to it and you've listened all the way through to this point. Otherwise, you're just, I don't know, maybe some sort of masochist or something who loves listening to things you hate. I don't know why you would do that, but thanks for listening to our show.
We still appreciate you, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, so yeah, that is the quest for 600. That's what we're looking at right now.
Oh, the quest. Ben. Yeah. Great way to work that in.
Nice.
Because I think we might have something to do with the quest come 100th episode. So
if we can track down the script, we're going to try to do a live read of the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, The Quest. We'll see how that actually turns out.
Beautifully. That's what I'm telling you right now.
So I want to give a shout out to two new Twitter followers really quickly before we wrap this episode up. At Tennille Jordan and at Ultim8HogFan. Thanks for the follows there. And we do have a couple emails that are just actually comments left on things at notjustnewmovies.com. So one of them is on a review of Rock of Ages. Somebody, who is this? The person says their name is I Just Don't Feel Like Writing My Name. On Rock of Ages, here we go. Screams, Tom Cruise, the ugly hairdos and choreography reminded me of Hairspray, which makes sense considering it's from the same director. That's Ben Pierce and me talking, not this comment. Now back into the comment. The remake. So I decided to skip it and watch Tom jump on Oprah's couch. NJNM has made me a fan of Die Hard 1 and 2. That is really the main reason I wanted to read that comment, because that is awesome. I'm glad that we could convert people.
It wasn't Bruce Willis. It wasn't Alan Rickman. It wasn't the action adventure Die Hard 1 and 2. It was us.
Yeah. Yeah. Woo. So there we go. A longtime listener, Kay Harty, has left us a comment on the.
It's K, the heart symbol, T, T-Y.
T-Y, so yes.
Mm-hmm. Katie with a heart in the middle, but we call her Kate Harty.
Right, yes. She left a comment on episode 93, the Tucker and Dale versus Evil one, and she says, this week's episode makes me want an All Dogs Go to Heaven episode or review in the future. I heart Charlie. He reminds me of my sister's dog, the Great Bambino. And then she offers a suggestion for a movie that we should do, Without a Paddle, which is the Seth Green movie from like 2008 or something. Maybe I think I actually watched...
Your boy, Shaggy from the Scooby-Doo films is also featured in that.
Oh, right. Yes, yes. His name is escaping me right now, but in any case,
Matthew Lillard.
Thank you. Yeah. I watched like the first half of Without a Paddle when I was in college and actually didn't mind it too much. It looked kind of, I don't know. The trailers I think made it like did it a disservice. But I liked the first half. Yeah. Anyway, so there's that. Thanks for the comment there, Kay Harty, as always. And then, Belmore Tallfish left us a comment on that same episode, the Tucker and Dale vs. Evil one. Firstly, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil was a great movie, regardless. Second, and firstly important, you scoffed at the anonymity of Tyler Labine and Alan Tudyk. Labine, thus you mayn't know, was the lead and driving force of the hilarious !network comedies Sons of Tucson and Mad Love. Tudyk, on the other hand, provides a shot of cumin in the gumbo that is ABC's Suburgatory, a delicious powder of the gods we shan't live without. Fourthly, I take earnest disrespect to you talking about Katrina Bowden and Katrina Bowden's midriff for no longer than a media minute. Included is a list of 10 things I would join hands with Bowden in performing. Number 1, getting Katrina to wear Lord Stanley's cup, possible or not possible. Number 2, Fat Boy Slim dancing really loud. Number 3, Edward 40 Hands. number 4, Algebra, The Good Kind, number 5, a cathartic reading of books by George R.R. Martin that aren't Fire and Ice, 6, the...
I like that one.
It's a Game of Thrones reference. Number 6, The Spanish Inquisition, revisited and redubbed, number 7... Eating Brisket with David Bowie, number 8, Murdering David Bowie, number 9, Purchasing a Car for $400, number 10, Guest Starring in the Live Action Movie, December Fire. Dwell on that and reconsider your priorities. In the meanwhile, great podcast, Knuckleheads, Woot Woot, Belmore. So that is one of the more entertaining comments we've had in a while.
If we can get an email that picks up every reference in that comment, I'm going to drop dead.
There's a lot.
I'll be done.
There's a lot going on there. I personally enjoy the, you know, picturing those 10 things, this person, Belmore, hand in hand with Katrina Bowden, doing all 10 things on that list. So
I don't think we mentioned that Alan Tudyk was also heavily featured in the series / film, Firefly / Serenity.
Yes. Yes.
Don't even think we dropped that reference.
Great stuff.
And, tried to communicate with the good Alan Tudyk, did not give me the time of day. So you're dead to me.
Dead to me. Steve the Pirate.
Dead to me, the Pirate.
Dead. All right.
And you know what's better than Sons of Tucson, Ben?
Sons of Anarchy?
No, Guns of Mooslawn.
Oh, Guns of Mooslawn. Man, bringing up the CBS and Fox pun wars from 2010 and 2011. That was that is old school. So people can check that out at thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com. Just do a little search there if you can for Guns of Mooslawn and see if you can track down what Tyler's talking about with that one. Let's go ahead and finish the character name game real quick. So Pretty Boy Floyd was the name. Tyler, do you have any idea what movie Pretty Boy Floyd is from?
I have The Fighter jotted down next to Pretty Boy Floyd. Am I close?
No, not really. It's a period piece.
The feature Mark Wahlberg?
Nope.
Mac Wahlberg?
Nope, it's not the Mark Wahlberg.
Pretty Boy Floyd, a period piece?
Yeah, like...
Like 1800s?
No, like mid...
Like 1960s?
Yeah, mid-1900s, I'd say. Maybe 1940s or something, 30s.
Pretty Boy Floyd... is he like a gangster?
Yep, it's a gangster movie.
Is he related to a Johnny Depp gangster movie?
It is. It actually is a Johnny Depp gangster movie.
Is it, why do I keep thinking Presumed Innocent? Because that had nothing to do with gangsters. That was last week's episode featuring Harrison Ford. But it is Public Enemies.
Yes, that is correct.
Ah.
Do you know the connection?
Terrible movie, by the way. Yes, let me think for a second. Christian Bale plays that one guy in Public Enemies, and he's also in a movie that was released this week called...
No, he's not.
The Dark Knight Returns?
No, not quite.
Okay, let me guess again.
Okay.
Johnny Depp plays that one guy.
Not Pretty Boy Floyd.
Not Pretty Boy Floyd. Okay, all right.
John Dillinger.
John Dillinger. Okay, so I'm trying. So Pretty Boy Floyd is the connection, right?
Yes,
the guy who played Pretty Boy Floyd.
Right. It was a really small role, so I don't blame you for not knowing it. It's almost a cameo because this dude is only in it for like 2 minutes or a minute or something.
All right. Let me think. It came out this week. Ted.
It's not Ted.
It's another film that was released this weekend, which is also called. Spider-Man released this weekend?
Nope, that's next Tuesday.
Okay, all right. Okay, let me get this.
Olivia Munn is in this movie.
Olivia Munn is in this, and it's called Something About Dads.
No.
Don't care for Olivia Munn either.
Matthew McConaughey is in this movie.
Oh, okay. So Magic Mike.
Yep. There we go.
There's a Matthew McConaughey in this.
Who is the star of Magic Mike?
There's a Channing Tatum reference here.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Is Channing Tatum perhaps the connection?
Yep. That is the connection.
Okay.
And he plays Pretty Boy Floyd in Public Enemies.
Really anticlimactic.
It was. yeah. So.
Yeah, that's good. I liked it. Still think you should have gone with the Fighter reference.
Then
I would have been right.
I couldn't change the character name game.
You're telling me that he didn't fight anyone named Pretty Boy Floyd in that movie.
Unfortunately not. All right, well, let's go
Mason
ahead and go back.
Line Dixon.
Let's go back and forth and tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
Speaking of the pun wars, Ben, a little report done at the Solar Sentinel, blogspot.com, where The Simpsons actually stole one of my ideas from the Great Fox Pun War. I don't know. Do you know what I'm referring to here?
Vaguely, if you want to give
people... there was a pun that I threw up against Ben P. back in the day, Media Consumed, benpierce.tumblr.com. And it shook your world, I think. It was a pun called The Chimpsons, where the show was in reference to The Simpsons, but instead of The Simpsons, they were all monkeys, so obviously it was called The Chimpsons, right?
Right.
Follow me so far?
Oh, yeah.
So recently, and again, this is like 3 or 4 months behind the curve because I just downloaded my photos to my computer. There was an episode of The Simpsons where they featured the Chimpsons, and so I just had to report that people who write The Simpsons read my blog and steal my ideas. So
without giving you any credit whatsoever,
without giving me a lick of credit. I also did a little study, kind of an investigative study, which I didn't do any research on. Vulcan rain. I don't know if you're familiar with this phenomenon. We're looking at the realism of fictional things. And rain that falls from the sky and then evaporates before it hits the ground. So it looks like it's raining, but it's really not. Vulcan rain.
Does it evaporate before it hits human level, like height level? Or does it evaporate inches from the ground?
It evaporates, about. So if you stood under the rain, you wouldn't feel it because it's evaporated before it gets to you.
Okay, gotcha.
That's what's so phenomenal about it.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I think it might be possible. It might happen in the deserts. The hottest deserts may have that going for them, but I'm not sure. So
you've got a pretty exhaustive graph detailing
exactly how there are a lot of variables to take into consideration.
Yeah, so.
Not only are you looking at the height of the clouds, you're also looking at the size of the raindrops. The rate of gravity, the temperature of both the sky and the ground.
Right.
So many things going on.
Yeah, so if you guys are more, lean more toward the study of sciences than movie appreciation, you can definitely check out that particular piece at the Solar Sentinel, and that will that'll scratch that itch for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, you don't learn anything. Let me stop you right there. You don't learn anything with this post, but it does make you think.
Right.
It does make you
think. Exactly. All right, well, you guys can track me down on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, firstshelling.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com. You can also find Tyler, we didn't mention, running the Twitter account for the Not Just New Movies podcast. That's at NJNM podcast for those of you who are not following us yet. And music for this episode will come courtesy of the Paper Moon score, if I can track that down, maybe the soundtrack. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We will be watching Point Blank for next week, the 2010 French film, not to be confused with Lee Marvin's movie or the Mickey Rourke version of Point Blank. So do not confuse those. And if you guys want to shoot us an email or leave us a voicemail, let us know your thoughts about that. We would appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.
And hey, why don't you just have another piece of pie? Thank you.